Good morning. It was over a month or so ago when John started our new teaching series on selflessness, which we called Selfless, the Teaching Series, a good name. And John spoke about selfless worship, and I'm going to carry on from that, and the next one we're going to talk about, Mark's asked if we would talk about selfless service. So this morning we're going to talk about serving. And there might be some passages that come into your head already, some that I might touch upon, some that we may not. Things that came into my head were little Samuel when he said, "Speak, Lord, your servant is listening." Or Jesus obviously came to serve and wash the feet. We might talk about that in a moment. Or there's lots of other ones that come from the Old Testament and the New Testament where people served each other. Serving is one of those threads that goes right through that we've spoken about before. You can't get away from serving in the Bible. And so I want to look on something that is maybe really important, but maybe something we don't talk too much about. And when I was thinking about it, the words of serving and stewardship, gifts and giving were sort of being used in my head interchangeably when I was thinking about serving, because I think giving, or serving, sorry, is giving in some way. You're giving your time, you're giving your support, you're giving your money. So I'm going to talk about giving, I'm going to talk about serving, stewardship, and I might slip in between any of those words, but I'm going to mean the same thing. We're going to base ourselves in Matthew chapter 25. If you've got a Bible, we'll turn to it in a moment. But the Bible as we have it, the Bible means the library, and it's made of 66 books, 39 in the Old Testament that we borrowed from the Jewish faith, and then 27 of our own that we've contributed. And those 27 books were compiled by the early church and were present in more or less their current form, after only about 200 years after Jesus was born. So the first church, the early church, compiled these stories from those who wrote it. They put it together, and it stayed very similar throughout that time. The main changes have been that chapters were added in. In the 13th century, someone sat down and said, let's divide these up. So instead of just a book of Matthew, we've got different chapters of Matthew. And then 300 years later, the verses were added in. The reason for that was so that we could study it. Because up until that point, the Bible was mainly kept in a church and people didn't have access to it. But when they started to become freely available, people wanted to study their own Bible, and we would encourage you to do that as well. And chapters and verses help us to do that. But we can get into the situation where we say, oh, we'll stop at the end of this verse, or we'll stop at the end of this chapter, or we'll just read this section. And sometimes we lose the flow. So I want to read quite a lot of Matthew 25 today, because I think these two passages fit nicely together. I don't know whether Jesus said them back to back, or whether Matthew thought they went together and put them together on purpose, or whether it's just a coincidence. I don't think it is a coincidence. It's a God incidence, if anything. But whether they were put together on purpose or not, I think there are similarities in them. And I want to talk about both of these passages as we look at selfless serving. So Matthew chapter 25, and starting at verse 14. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey, who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with 2 bags gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold bought the other 5. Master, he said, you've entrusted me with 5 bags. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold, and see, I have gained 2 more. His master replied again, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked lazy servant. So you knew, did you, that I harvest where I have not sown and gathered where I have not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers. And so then when I returned, I would have at least received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has been given more, for whoever has will be given more, and they will have in abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they do have will be taken from them. Now throw this worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people from one another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats to his left. Then the king will say to those on the right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you as a stranger invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you ill or in prison and go and visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you did for me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed to the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes and you did not clothe me. I was ill and in prison and you didn't look after me. They will also answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or ill or in prison and not help you? He will reply to them, truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away to eternal punishment and the righteousness to eternal life. Here endeth the marathon of St. Matthew. So, here we see a parable and what seems to be a prophetic account of what will happen at the end of the age when Jesus returns. So it's a glimpse of what happens in the future depending on how people serve. I want to pick three points up from these two passages. Firstly, God gives good gifts. The master and the king are clearly symbols of God, who God is and who Jesus is. And the first story tells us that God gives according to ability. We haven't got time this morning to go into foreknowledge or predestination, but God knew, or the master knew, his servants well enough that he knew which ones would serve him well and which one wouldn't. So he gave the most to the best servants, and he gave the least to the ones he knew would struggle to serve. A modern-day translation of that I read was Bags of Gold, but you may know this story as the Parable of the Talents. And at in the footnote of my Bible, it said that a talent is worth 20 years' wages. I think modern translations use bags of gold to be a bit more generic because there's different ways of measuring, different accounts of how much a talent was. But in the footnote of the NIV, it says it's 20 years' wages. So if that was in today's currency, if £27,000 is the national average wage at the moment, that would mean that 20 years' wages, one talent would be the equivalent of over £500,000. And five talents would be £2.7 million. That's a big bag of gold. That's a very good gift to be given, isn't it? But I can possibly see why that servant was a bit scared of being given £1 million and what he would have to do with it. However, in the Old Testament particularly, in 2 Samuel 12 and 1 Chronicles 20, and at the back of my Bible, in the table of weights and measures, it says a talent was a weight. It's a weight between, I think it was 20 and 40 kilograms of gold. The passage in 1 Chronicles and 2 Samuel, David defeats a king and he puts a crown on his head that weighed a talent of gold. That's a very heavy crown. Talk about when you're weighting gold. If that was converted into the current weight measurement for gold, one talent would be nearly £1 million, and five talents would be £4.62 million. That's an even bigger bag of gold. There's a great gift, a great blessing that the master entrusted to his servants. And if that's God, then it's a great gift and a great blessing that he entrusts to us. God gives amazing gifts to his servants. But then the master says, you've been faithful with a few things. Come and I will give you many. Come and enjoy my inheritance or your inheritance. Which says to me that God always wants to give more. If we are faithful with a little bit, even if that little bit seems a lot to us, God wants to give us more and more and more. But God's gifts aren't just financial. There are three main occasions in Romans 12, 1 Corinthians 12, and Ephesians 4 where the gifts of the Spirit are mentioned. And there's other mentions of gifts in other passages as well. So depending on how you count them up, and some of them are duplicated, there's 24 or 25 different spiritual gifts that are mentioned in the New Testament. Some of them are obvious and ones that we might desire. So for example, prophecy comes up there a few times. Tongues and miracles, I'm sure we'd all love to have those gifts. Maybe not martyrdom and voluntary poverty. They may not be at the top of our wish list as we're giving them to God. So in the second story, God is talking about people who have served the needy in different ways. And I think here he's talking about some of these gifts. When they were giving food to the hungry, they were doing the gift of giving. To the thirsty, they were serving them. To the stranger, they were showing hospitality. They were helping to clothe the naked. They were pastoring the sick and showing mercy to the prisoner. Obviously, I've linked those gifts to that passage, but you might have other gifts that you might think, oh, that fits better. But I don't think I'm stretching the point too much to say that when we help the last, the least, and the lost, we are using heaven's resources that have been given to us to bless other people. Notice too that Jesus doesn't say they couldn't help. He says, you didn't help. They had the opportunity, they had the resources, they just didn't have the willingness to serve. If we want to serve God, we have to serve other people. So God gives good gifts. Secondly, we are blessed to be a blessing. Both accounts end with the servants being blessed for something that they have done. Now, hear me right. I am not saying that we should bless others or we should serve others so that God blesses us. I think there's lots of problem with the prosperity gospel that's been going around. Name it and claim it. And despite what the Lego movie says, just because it rhymes doesn't mean it's true. Okay? So I'm not saying the prosperity gospel is true in any way, but I believe that God has blessed us so that we can bless others. And as a result, God blesses us even further. So God does want us to serve others, and God will bless us even further, but not because of our actions, because he's a God of love who wants to give us in abundance. Other verses that, I'll come back to that in a moment. So you may have heard of this saying, apparently by the American billionaire and life coach, Tony Robbins. He said, don't cross oceans for people who wouldn't cross a puddle for you. The world might look at it and say it that way. If they're not going to help you, don't bother helping them. But Jesus came to love and Jesus came to serve and he calls us to serve like him. So the church should say, do it. Cross oceans for people. Love people, all people, no conditions attached. No wondering whether they're worthy or not. Cross oceans, climb mountains. Life isn't about what you can gain, it's about what you can give. Richard Foster says that as a servant of Christ, we need to be willing enough to voluntarily humble ourselves to such a level that when we're serving others, we consider it a joy and a blessing when occasionally, or maybe inevitably, they step on us and they use us as a doormat. He says, you can't be hurt if you're willing to be hurt. If you put yourself in that position of such a humble, lowly servant, it doesn't matter if people tread on you, walk over you to get their blessing, because you've been blessed as well by serving them. Matthew 6 says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where vermin destroy and thieves will break in, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and vermin do not destroy, where thieves do not break in. For where your treasure is, your heart will be there also." And it continues, "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." We need to choose who we serve and who we use. We can either use God or we can either serve God. We can either serve money or we can use our money. I suggest that we should use our money to serve God rather than the other way around. Luke 16, verse 9 talks about us using our resources wisely to gain friends and to benefit people, and then we will be welcomed in to our eternal home. Encouraging us to think that our heavenly rewards that we require are more important than the wealth we may seek to acquire. That rhymes and it is true. I spoke last time when I was much more fancy dressed, when I spoke about the bride of Christ. And in Revelation, John says that the wedding dress, the pure white gown that the bride, the church, will wear, is made up by the good deeds that we do on earth. We will be rewarded in heaven. But our sinful human nature makes it almost impossible to please God in this life or the next if we have an unselfish and unhealthy attitude towards our finances, our time, and our possessions. True, loving service towards others enables us to act in a way that not only has a greater blessing for others, but also a greater blessing for ourselves. Again, Richard Foster says, "Nothing disciplines the excessive desires of the flesh like service, and nothing transforms the desires of the flesh like serving in hiddenness. The flesh whines against service, but screams against hidden service. It strains and pulls for honor and recognition. It will devise subtle, religiously accepted means to call attention to the service rendered. If we stoutly refuse to give in to this lust of the flesh, we crucify it. Every time we crucify the flesh, we crucify our pride and our arrogance. Even more than the transformation that is occurring within us, we are aware of a deeper love and joy in God. Our days are punctuated with spontaneous breathings of praise and adoration. Joyous, hidden service to others is an enacted prayer of thanksgiving to God. Selfless service is selfless worship. The two go together. You cannot worship without service." In that quote, David Foster talked about hidden service leads to greater humility. And Claire spoke about this last week when she said that what we do in our everyday life, whether it's at work, at school, or at home, should be a reflection of what we do on a Sunday morning. We are not called to be servants on Sundays and masters on Mondays. Serving is a lifestyle. It's a way of living. It's a vocation. It's a calling that we need to enact. So hidden service is a blessing, but hiding our gifts is a problem. My last point on this is buried gifts need to be unearthed. Buried gifts need to be unearthed because history or eternity will hold us accountable. Max Lucado says this, "If you lived in Germany during World War II, would you have stood up to the Nazis for your Christian faith? If you lived in South Africa during apartheid, or in southern USA in the 50s and 60s, would you have stood up against racism? In years to come, if your grandchildren find out that today, in 2018, 22,000 children died of poverty and 2,300 people died as a result of drinking dirty water, what will you say when they ask you what you did about it?" Individuals in history like Bonhoeffer, Martin Luther King, and Desmond Tutu stand out for opposing apartheid, opposing racism, and opposing the Nazi regime because of their Christian faith. But what about the church? So we look back in history, how were they standing up against those things? at a time when unity and action was needed, large parts of the church stayed quiet. They split, even on each side. And especially in America, they even propagated and justified the abuse of humans by abusing the Bible. The church is the hands and feet of Christ. And blessings will flow where we decide to go to. Pain will stay where we stay away from. I believe that the 2 billion people around the world have the power to end poverty, to end hunger, to end war, to end famine, and all the resources that God has given us as a church are enough. The church is the means of God on this earth. If we want to see change, we need to be united and move forward in these areas. If we want heaven to come on earth, God's already said, here are the gifts, go and be heaven and stop the hell. So we have the resources, but what do? Sometimes the worldly church cares too much about cathedrals and buildings and comfy chairs, smells, bells and big hats than they do about serving the poor. Maybe we've buried our gifts. And it's easy to stand here and to say humanity does this or the wider church does this, but what about us? And what about me? What have I buried that I need to release to help and serve other people? It's only fairly recently I've started worship leading again. And for a time I didn't do it. For about 3 or 4 years, I didn't want any part in it. But it was a gift that I was given that at some point was so passionate in me that I taught myself to play guitar. And yet I let things come in. Words were said, actions were done, and I pushed it down. I buried it. And despite Maria almost constantly telling me off and encouraging me to lead them to sing again, because of my decisions, I decided not to. Maybe it's just my problem. Maybe it's not. Put up here some of the other gifts that were mentioned earlier with some questions about what we could do. So the first one under the top says, encouragement. Who could we encourage on a regular basis? Do you have the gift of encouragement? Or could you step out more in the gift of encouragement to encourage other people? Could you go and do the shopping for someone, or mow their lawn, or clean the church building? Or could you feel the need to help in the kids' work? Could you give more of your time, money, and resources to benefit someone else in some way? Can you help a struggling family if you've got the gift of administration? Could you help them with their money management or their time management? Could you invite people round using the gift of hospitality for a meal, or to make jam sandwiches for the homeless people, or to help people come into the conference in a few weeks' time? What gifts has God given you that you could use more? Whenever we look around the world, we see so much need. But whenever God looks at his church, he sees much more potential. God has given us the gifts. He's given us the way to act. He's given us the need. We just need to step out in faith and use their gift. And sometimes it is a step of faith. Sometimes we may be thought of differently, thought of badly. Maybe sometimes we may even be abused ourselves. But if we are willing to humble ourselves so much that we serve other people because we serve God, we're going to be in a much greater place. So I've got 3 questions for us this morning from these 3 points. If God gives good gifts, what gifts have you been given? If we are blessed to be a blessing to others, how are you going to use those gifts? And if buried things need to be unearthed, what are you going to dig up? And what are you going to dust off? No, I'm not going to stand here and try and manipulate you into serving. I haven't got a sign-up sheet to come and sign at the end. But there is always need. And if something is stirring within you, if you've been reminded, oh, years ago I did this or I did that, then maybe the Holy Spirit is saying, I've given you this gift. You've buried it deep down. I want you to dig it back up again and to serve me and to serve my church. We can't talk about service without talking about how Jesus served his church and how he served us. John 3:16 says, God so loved that he gave. 1 John 3:16 says, this is how you know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. And so we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother or sisters in need and has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. Pretty strong sections implying that if we don't serve with our actions, we don't love God at all. John, when he introduced this passage, reminded us of the time when Mary washed Jesus' feet as an act of selfless worship. On the night he was betrayed, Jesus took out his outer clothing, wrapped around a towel, and showed us how to serve by getting down on his knees and washing feet. Jesus showed us to serve in the same way that Mary showed us to worship. We need to use the gifts that God has given us. We need to humble ourselves. We need to take off the outer garments of humanity, wrap around us the towel of humility, and become a selfless servant. Amen.